Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
Dr. Brian Miller is a brilliant physicist with a God-given gift of sharing his faith through science. His perspectives on the sometimes combative relationship between science and faith have seen him become a highly sought-after global speaker on subjects as varied as evidence of God in science to the Shroud of Turin. We connected with Dr. Miller while he was in Australia recently and began with his own personal faith story.
Well, what happened was when I was in second grade, I was in front of the altar, and I remember having this strange sense that I really needed to serve God with all my life, but I had no idea what that meant. So it was an idea that came and then left. And I believe God was sort of overseeing my life for the next several years, but it wasn't until my senior year of high school when I read through the New Testament in its entirety. And when I did that, it was like all the pieces I had learned all my life really came together. And I understood my purpose in life. I understood Jesus died for my sins. I understood my call to push forward his mission, and it was a sense then that the Holy Spirit was really speaking in the depths of my heart. So that was really the point where things became real.
Doctor, as one who's often described as a man who straddles the gap between science and faith, how broad is that gap?
No, it's not actually. In fact, it's just the opposite. It was, if you study the history of modern science, the great scientists of the past, like Newton, Kepler, Galileo, they were all Christians. In fact, it was their Christian faith that propelled them into science. Because to do science, you have to believe that the world is orderly, that there's orderly laws, which points to a lawgiver. You have to also believe that we have the ability to understand that order. And that really only makes sense if we are created in the image of the Creator. In fact, if a person doesn't believe in God, they have to borrow Christian assumptions to do science. Because if you believe we simply, our brain just evolved to eat more, to flee predators, to reproduce, why would you believe that the brain would evolve in a way that would allow us to understand things like the expansion of the universe or quantum mechanics? That only makes sense from a Christian perspective.
Doctor, if we flip the coin over then and look at science from the perspective of faith in that our God is responsible for the science that we now study, are there aspects of science that make understanding God more challenging?
Right, and it depends a little bit on how you interpret the book of Genesis. Some Christians interpret it as the first few chapters of Genesis as representing creation about 6,000 years ago in a literal 6 days. And that's a bit of tension with modern science. Other Christians believe that those days represent longer periods of time. And if you're willing to give a little bit of space to that, then what you find is the biblical account of creation actually fits perfectly with almost all of science. The idea of the beginning of the universe in a burst of energy fits perfectly with God said, "Let there be light." You look at the days of Genesis, God created. When you look in the fossil record, what you see is things appear suddenly, and then once they appear, they don't change exactly the way that Genesis alludes to. You look at the laws of physics, and it shows that everything seems to have been designed for the purpose of allowing life to exist, which perfectly fits the Christian faith in Romans 1. The main tension, I would say, is that you do see violence in nature. You see things like whales eating dolphins, like killer whales eating dolphins. Mm. That issue of natural evil would be a real tension. However, it's not a hopeless tension, because there are many Christians that have explained that. For instance, Bill Dembski wrote a book called The End of Christianity, and he argued that God knew the fall. He anticipated the fall because he sees across time and space. So the world was created good, but it was not created in its full, final, intended state. So we're in a world that is good, but we're headed for a creation in which all suffering, all death will be ended. But even if you look at natural evil, things that seem bad to us are actually essential for our world to work properly. Like a hurricane causes damage, but it's essential to recycle energy in the world that allows our planet to operate properly. Even animals killing other animals is essential, because let's say you didn't kill any rabbits, the rabbits would just reproduce to the point where they overcame the earth. So even with natural evil, so much of it is essential for our creation. Yet we know in the end that our creation will take on a new level of perfection without death.
Doctor, it would seem that both science and people of faith are pretty comfortable with a beginning. Does science support faith, though, in the prospect of decay, that things are winding down to an end?
Yeah, absolutely. It fits very much in the spirit of Paul, where he talks about creation is in a state of decay, longing for the revelation of the sons of God and things like that. So you see that the picture of the universe is almost like a clock that's wound up, and the clock is ticking down. So there's this concept called entropy, which is essentially things go from order to disorder. That's like a car, a new car. Even if you leave it in your garage or in your driveway, is eventually going to start to rust. It's going to start to break down. And with our universe, what will eventually happen is all of the useful energy of our universe will run out. The stars will run out of energy. And all that's going to happen is we'll have lifeless particles floating through space. So this whole idea that the universe is in decay is very well understood by physicists.
If we were to have another Brian on the telephone, just like you, but he held a different position, would it be possible for you to prove to that other Brian that God existed?
Well, what happens is it depends on what they're assuming, because some people, from the very beginning, assume as the foundation of their belief system that there is no God. They assume that all that exists is matter and energy. And what they'll do is they'll interpret the data through that framework. And if that's the case, I can't change their mind because they've assumed from the beginning that there is no God. And that's a belief that they will not change under any circumstance. In fact, there is a professor at Harvard named Richard Lawton, and he basically said in an article about Carl Sagan, is he says that scientists will accept what are called just-so stories that are counterintuitive and really seem to be a stretch of the imagination because they're unwilling to accept the possibility of a creator, to paraphrase. So people like that can't be convinced because it is a matter of blind faith. However, my experience is most scientists aren't quite that dogmatic. Some are kind of on the fence. Maybe there's a God, maybe there's not a God. They may assume there isn't, but I find with a lot of them, as I start to explain the evidence more clearly and show how a lot of what they've been taught has been really misrepresentations of the fact, many of them do switch over to my side.
Given, Doctor, that most of us aren't blessed with the broad understanding of the intersection of science and faith that you are, could you arm us with a 2 or 3 point layperson's cheat sheet to usefully share our belief through science?
Okay, great. One thing is, point one, we know the universe had a beginning. Time and space itself had a beginning. Therefore, it had to have a creator outside of time and space. Point two, we see that the laws of physics were designed with life in mind. If gravity were greater, if gravity were less, there would be no planets, there would be no life. That tells us that this creator who is outside of time and space is not just infinitely powerful, but he's personal because he created life, the universe with life in mind. Point three, when you look at the origin of life, what you see is that the laws of physics tend to take order and create disorder. They also tend to take things which are high energy and create things which are low energy. The first cell is both highly ordered and high energy. Therefore, a cell could never come about except through a creator. Point four, we see in DNA of life information. You see that the nucleotides of DNA are in a very specific order in the same ways that the letters on the page of a book are in a very specific order to convey an intentional purpose. That's called information. Information is only the product of a human mind, or only the product of a mind, either human or divine. You can't create information through natural processes because it has no mass, it has no color, it has no physical properties. It's a conceptual idea. So that shows us that life was created by an intelligent designer. Those would be some major points.
What are the areas of life that you look at and say, I don't know how to approach this. What do I do with this? And then how do you deal with that problem?
Well, one of the big challenges theologically is the issue of how do I understand God's sovereignty versus human free will? How do those two come together?
Yeah.
And that's a mystery I don't really, obviously, people have debated that for centuries. I don't fully understand it. It kind of keeps me up at night occasionally. Another issue really is how much the church has failed through history. because Christians have been given the power of the Holy Spirit. They've been given an incredible mission. Yet so many Christians live a life of distraction, where God is kind of a hobby as opposed to the center of their life. And even though Jesus predicted that, he said that many will hear but not follow, it still saddens me and perplexes me of why that's the case.
Doctor, as you head home now to the States and reflect on the time that you spent here in Australia, are there any aspects of the expression of our faith that strike you as unique?
Well, that's an excellent question. I'm not sure if it's unique, but I think with Australians, a big issue is the issue of relevance. Like, I think what happens is many people were perhaps raised in the church, but now they have become a little bit indifferent to religion, maybe a little bit inoculated to it. So a big challenge, I think, for the church is to prove to the world not just the academic truth of the Christian faith, but its power to transform lives, its power to transform culture, that when the church comes together, obeys Christ's teachings, follows the voice of the Holy Spirit, they can do things like radically reduce poverty. They can free people from depression. So I think that's a definite issue I've seen in Australia.
Dr. Brian Miller, it's been a delight catching up with you. Thank you so much for your time on Open House Around Australia.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure being in your nation.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.